Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, apparently the cliff is a little bit further away than a lot of people suspected. There was a whole lot of talk in Washington and on Wall Street last week that if a deal was not in place to raise the debt ceiling by, well, now, the international markets would go crazy and Wall Street would follow. Well, turns out that hasn't happened exactly yet. It doesn't mean that folks won't freak out as we get even closer to August 2nd. But apparently, folks are at least biding their time now, and the markets are not spooking, well, either side really, but certainly not Republicans, to make a bad deal.
You know, one of the things that kind of struck out me as I was listening to the radio this morning, they had a University of Maryland professor, Peter Morici, on. And Peter Morici is kind of like, who's the guy on CNBC who jumps up and screams all the time?
Jim Cramer?
He's like Jim Cramer, but less calm. picture him with like a triple espresso or something. And Morici is, you know, kind of makes Chris Christie look kind of shy and retiring and vague hints and allusions. So you never have to guess too far about what Morici thinks. So he was noting this. He said he was at CNBC this morning, and he said you'd never seen so many big names in the green room at 4 a.m., meaning that the expectation of the financial press, and I think the political press, was here it comes, Monday morning, actually before America awakes Monday morning, the Asian markets will tank and we will awaken to a prospect of post-debt ceiling life, and it really didn't occur. And what his argument is that, look, the markets have already figured out that there is enough money coming in to take care of the debt service, all the debt we got to pay, and Social Security, and, you know, a good chunk of what the government has to pay. Now, what they're going to have to do is, you know, they'd have to prioritize some other things, and basically America would have to do what a lot of people do when the money gets really tight, is you prioritize which bills you pay and you let certain bills slip. If you're a government contractor, you would not be happy to hear, oh, the check is in the mail, when you call up the U.S. Treasury Department and say, hey, you know, where's the money you owe us? Having said that, it sounds like the U.S. can function. He compared it to the government shutdown we just saw up in Minnesota. It was inconvenient for quite a few folks. There were furloughs. There were people who were laid off for, you know, knowing it was going to be temporary. But life went on. As he pointed out, there were still state troopers on the highways. There were still guards working the prisons, and most of the welfare checks went out. And after a while, they worked out a deal, and things, you know, life went on as normal. He seems to think this can occur, and the only way we have, the way he put it very explicitly, was the only way we have a default is if Tim Geithner chooses a default to create a political advantage for Barack Obama. Now, I don't know about you, Gray, but when I hear that, I say, aha, well, that means we're going to have a default.
Right.
Because that's, you know, the number one interest of everybody in the Obama administration. But the market seemed to think that that would be such a, dare I say, suicidal move by the Obama administration. The idea that, you know, Barack Obama, 9.2% unemployment, and the guy who destroyed America's AAA credit rating would be too much for him to endure in a re-election bid. So they seem to think he's going, you know, that a deal will occur. And I have to acknowledge, I have to salute you for recognizing you were one of the folks who thought that it was too early for the GOP to start looking at backup plans, Plan B, Plan C. I think it was Gasparino, the other CNBC contributor who is now over at Fox Business Channel, who wrote in the New York Post this morning, who said, look, let's remember that the Obama team thrives on chaos. This is how they got elected in 2008, and they probably believe that chaos is a political winner for them. And this is the good martini, folks. The good martini is that chaos has not occurred yet.
That's true. Although I'm not sure, obviously, self-inflicted chaos is going to pay off for them the way that chaos perpetrated by a whole host of entities and political figures paid off for them in 2008. This one is pretty easy to trace back if, in fact, they decide to go down the self-punishing America route by deciding to default on the debt. Hard to understand why anyone would not blame them for that. So,
Greg, I would just observe that if Obama does and Geithner do choose the course of default, that Obama as the Joker poster that everyone said was so horrible and over the top and offensive suddenly wouldn't seem so crazy out there, would it, Ed?
No, right on the money, right on the money, absolutely. And as it turns out, you know, Jim, we've been getting some of the best of sanctimonious Obama. I hope they put together a compilation CD or put something out on iTunes, because his rhetoric lately has been really at the top of his game in terms of demagoguery and so forth. And one of the things he's been saying over and over and over again is that, you know, it's just these rigid House Republicans, moderate Republicans and congressional Democrats in the White House. We can find this common ground. It's the people in the House Republican Conference that can't find this bipartisan consensus. Well, Turns out that once House Speaker John Boehner and Majority Leader Eric Cantor walked out, they decided to have some negotiations with just the Senate side. And, of course, they got together with Mitch McConnell, and they got together with Harry Reid even. And they came together with a deal, and the staffers were working out the language. And Harry Reid, of all people, decided to take the issue to the president, and the president balked at it. So here's John Boehner Friday night explaining who's really to blame for this bipartisan divide.
The White House moved the goalpost. There was an agreement on some additional revenues until yesterday when the president demanded $400 billion more, which was going to be nothing more than a tax increase on the American people. But secondly, they refused to get serious about cutting spending and making the tough choices that are facing our country on entitlement reform.
So now it's Obama, Jim, who is the rigid one. And what I especially love about this story, as I read it in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution today, is that Harry Reid, who apparently signed on to the deal since his staffers were working out the language, the moment the president rejected it, Harry Reid completely did a 180 and started talking about how the House Republicans weren't willing to make reasonable compromises again. So clearly he's a man who thinks for himself.
Well, we can't be that surprised. For a while there, I wasn't sure if we were going to be able to use our catchphrase, "Way to go, Nevada, way to go." But now that we've seen him, you know, I've never seen Harry Reid say something while Obama's drinking water. So very clearly, he doesn't say, you know, when Obama says jump, Reid says how high. And you know, clearly he fell in line on this one. So once again, way to go, Nevada, way to go. You talk about sanctimonious from the president when you began this. And I was noting that during his rally at University of – I'm sorry, his economic town hall at the University of Maryland on Friday – Obama at one point said, well, you know, we've got everybody on board with this. Problem is these House Republicans, and I'm going to keep working on them. But the important thing is nobody should be trying to score political points in this. Now, I'm the guy who's like saying, you know, everything from Obama comes with an expiration date. It is kind of striking to see the expiration date hit in the following sentence. Or maybe in the preceding sentence. He kind of, you know, went back in time to reach that one. But this is what Obama does, is I'm the adult in the room, and these, you know, and if I don't get my way, I'll walk away. You know, there's somebody was observing that Obama walks away and he's the adult in the room, and Boehner walks away and he's a child. You know, this is the narrative we have. I think bit by bit, Obama is starting to hurt himself in this. And for, as we've been noting for the last week, for something that's supposedly a political disaster for Republicans, the Democrats don't act like this is a political winner for them. So I don't know whether this is the public is getting a pox on both your houses, whether Obama as the president has more to lose, or whether, you know, Obama's realizing that the public is tiring of the, you know, if it's a shame I have to govern with these people, you know. It's a shame you elected these people because they're so unreasonable. You know, oh, come on, America, get with the program. So, you know, I don't know. Something there is not working for them. And once again, this is our strangely bad martini.
Yes, it absolutely is. And anyway, on to number three now. And for those of you who are faithful listeners, you'll remember that on January 19th, we did a feature in the second martini about Oregon Democratic Congressman David Wu, who at the time we were hearing reports about the fact that he had sent his staff a picture of himself in a tiger costume for some reason. He gave really angry speeches with no real good reasons to reelect him, took off the weekend before the election day, decided to campaign by hanging out at the place where folks from international flights were arriving in Portland. And
The International Arrivals Terminal, which the TSA allowed him past a checkpoint, which is a no-no. I was pretty sure, you know, you and I can't travel without having our junk touched. But apparently, if you're a congressman, you can hold, you know, your campaign rallies right there as people come off the plane.
Oh, absolutely right. So here's what Jim Garrity had to say back in January.
Maybe this is just him not having his coffee in the morning and doing some odd things. Or maybe this is a pattern that's much more troubling. Either way, hoping Congressman Wu gets perhaps some much-needed rest in the near future. Perhaps this job isn't for him if this is what it's driving him to.
If you voted for perhaps it's a sign of a much more troubling pattern, you win, because Congressman Wu has now been accused of forcing himself sexually on an 18-year-old woman in California. This is a woman who graduated from high school in 2010. He claims it was consensual, says he doesn't need to resign because he's not going to run for re-election again. Jim, this is obviously an issue. These sex scandals hit both parties. But for the second time in just a matter of months, you've got a Democrat on the rocks, Nancy Pelosi calling for an investigation, with both members of Congress who are in the crosshairs saying, oh, she was of age, I think.
Yeah. It's kind of disturbing when your defense is, she was legal!
Exactly.
Right. I'm a member of Congress. It's perfectly okay for me, a 40-some or 50-some-year-old man, to be banging an 18-year-old. It's perfectly legal. Yeah, yeah. A couple of things, you know, you alluded to some stuff. We were talking about that before the election, because, you know, there was obviously some weird behavior beforehand. After the election, large numbers of Wu's staff resigned, and then they started talking to the Oregon Press. And if you'd like a really disturbing reading, go back and check those articles, because apparently, like, the tiger photo was only the beginning of it. This is a campaign is through the lens of, say, a David Lynch film. It sounds like Wu is a really, really troubled individual, sending emails to staffers through the in the voice of his children.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. There's your spine-chilling moment of today's third martini. So when I say I hope Wu gets the help he needs, really, I think this man, and apparently his staff seriously considered committing him to a psychiatric hospital while doing everything they could to reelect him to Congress. These fantastic, noble profiles and courage. You know, really, in that circumstance, I'm really thinking, would a Republican congressman have really been that bad? You know, so... So now Wu has this very troubling allegations against him. He has indicated he's not running for re-election in 2012. Pelosi has called for an investigation. I think, as I said, this sounds like a person who has a lot of very big problems on his plate. Republican prospects, if there were an open seat election, whether it be now or 2012, are not great, but, you know, considerable. Probably easier to run against Wu than against some Democrat not affiliated with Wu. Having said that, basically, every Democrat in this district has, you know, kind of turned turned a blind eye to increasingly bizarre behavior on Wu's part. So this is a man who I believe back in 2000, middle of last decade, basically was saying there are Klingons in the White House. And I don't think it was a metaphor. So Wu probably, hopefully, desperately needs some help and hope he gets it. And I apologize to everyone for the creepy, chilling martini to end the day with. But I'd note, hey, blame Oregon's first district.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to do that. And you know it's bad when Nancy Pelosi gets out front of the story for the most part. She was kind of late to the party on the Anthony Weiner story. So, yeah, folks, if you have the opportunity here at lunch hour, take a shower, because I know this is a pretty creepy one. But we'll be back with hopefully more wholesome materials tomorrow. We can only hope. Jim?
Happy Monday, everybody.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We'll see you for the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch.